Well, good morning. My name is Brendan. I'm one of the student ministers here at St. George North. I'm normally at Carlton at 9 a.m. So it's a pleasure to come here and join you all at Bexley North the couple times that I get to. We're going to get into this beautiful, beautiful chapter of 1 Timothy. We were in a series of 1 Timothy. We took a short break, as you'll know, to think about the mission and vision of our church. But we're getting back into it today just to for a bit of context to help us. 1 Timothy is a letter from the Apostle Paul, written to Timothy, who's a younger man who's looking after a church in Ephesus. And Paul is helping Timothy to know what to do to look after this church. And right before the passage we're looking at today, he said, "Pay close attention to your life and your teaching." See, Paul is saying that our life and what we believe are so connected. The things we believe impact the way we live, and the way we live shows the things we believe. So that's kind of the context that leads into this passage. So I'm going to pray as we get into it. So please join me. Our great and loving Father, thank you for providing so generously for us. Please help us to know your generosity and to be generous to those amongst us in need. Amen. Well, what would someone have to do for you to say about them that they have denied the faith? That's a strong thing to say. You know, it's not just that they've made a mistake or that they've misunderstood a passage or even sinned, but denied the faith. It's a very strong thing to say. You know, in this letter that we're looking at today, 1 Timothy, Paul speaks about anger, about quarreling, drunkenness, violence, hypocrisy, the love of money, even false teaching. Even in the next chapter, he's going to talk about people using religion for personal gain. What I found so striking this week as I was preparing is that Paul has all these evil things in his mind, truly evil things. But he says the thing that's so incompatible with the Christian faith, that if you do it, you deny the faith, is not providing for your family. It's really serious for Paul. Look at how he puts it in verse 8. Chapter 5, verse 8, it's striking. He says, "If anyone does not provide for his own family, especially for his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." That's a really heavy thing to say about someone. And it's striking at first, but I think it's obvious with a moment's reflection. Because what is the Christian faith all about? The Christian faith is about God, who generously provides for us. He generously provides for those in need. We see this throughout the whole Old Testament, a long history of God providing for Israel. He provides freedom from slavery. He gives them food in the wilderness. He gives them a land to dwell in and then rest from their enemies. God provides. And you know, there's even laws where to ensure that those who are most in need would be provided for. If you forgot to one of your bundles of grain when you were harvesting and you went back home and you forgot one of them in the field, by law, you were supposed to leave it there, so that a widow or an orphan or a refugee could have something to eat. God cares so much about providing for those who are most in need. The Christian faith is about God who provides generously for those in need. And we know that most of all, God has generously given us forgiveness, our greatest need, at the cost of his very own Son. How generous is God to us? See, through forgiveness, God generously invites us into his family. He makes his home our home. He gives us everything we need. And when someone grasps how generous God has been to them, they cannot help but be generous to others. They give as they've been given too. But I think what Paul is saying is that if someone does not provide for those in need in their own family or even in their church family, they have denied the faith. They're willing to accept God's provision, but they're not willing to provide for others. It denies what's so central to our faith, the God who's provided for us. This is a really confronting passage today, because we're going to be challenged to be generous. And I think one of the reasons it's so confronting is because it's so real. It's not a kind of theoretical theology that we're thinking about. As we go through this passage, we're going to have names in our heads. Real people. This is challenging. And we're going to be challenged that Christians are to provide generously for those who cannot provide for themselves. Because in our own need, we have been generously provided for by God. Now, back in Paul's day, in the first century, widows were particularly vulnerable. Without a husband to provide or a social welfare system, they often fell into poverty and even slavery. And Paul outlines how the church is to provide for four different kinds of widows. And that's kind of the outline today. If you've got an outline, you can follow along. First, we'll think about widows with family. See, Christians are to provide for those in need within their family. Paul begins in verse 3 by saying that the church should provide for widows who are genuinely in need, and what he means by that is widows who are alone, widows who don't have other support, other family. Because if a widow has family, then it is first their family's responsibility to provide for them. Have a look at verse 4, how Paul puts it in verse 4. He says, "If a widow has children or grandchildren, let them learn to practice godliness towards their own family first and to repay their parents, for this pleases God." See, children and grandchildren are to prioritize caring first for their own family, even before their church family, even before one another. We are to provide for those who cannot provide for themselves, but there is a priority. We are to consider carefully who we practice godliness towards first. And can I say that this is hard? Because we don't get to decide who our family is. We don't get to decide who we're first obligated to care for. It's true that there are some people who are easier to provide for than others. People who are thankful in receiving help, who initiate moving forward themselves, whose needs are a little bit more straightforward. And sometimes we can be so busy providing for people in our church that we neglect to care for those who we're first obligated to care for. But we need to learn to practice godliness first to our family. And this can be really complicated sometimes on the ground. This priority, it's fitting because in verse 4, Paul says that children repay their parents. There's a kind of repayment, right? As a parent, you look after your children, you give so much to them and do so much for them. It's fitting that children repay their parents by caring for them. And I don't think Paul is kind of saying, okay, well, consider how good you think your parents were to you and you kind of equally repay that. He's not saying that at all. He's saying, by nature of being a parent, they gave. And so you're obligated to repay. And Paul also says in verse 4 that it pleases God. It pleases God when people care for their parents and their family. And shouldn't that be the thing that motivates all of our life? That we might live a life that pleases God? Too often Christians, and I include myself in this, we're not actually motivated by pleasing God. You know, how often does pleasing God make a kind of pros and cons list that you write out? And how often is it the deciding factor? You know, everything on the list is kind of pulling you one way, but you know that this decision is what will please God. And so you do that. I've been really challenged this week that what I should do should be to please God. God is pleased when we learn godliness by providing first for our own family. Paul gives one more reason for why we're to care for our family first, and it brings us to our next point, widows without family. We're to care for our family first to free up the church to care for those who don't have family. Look at verse 16, down at the bottom, verse 16. Paul says, if any believing woman has widows in her family, let her help them. Let the church not be burdened, so that it can help widows in genuine need. See, personally, we're to provide first to our own family so that the church, as a church, we can provide for those amongst us without family. In this letter, it's really amazing how Paul describes the church. He describes the church as the household of God. Church is family. You know, the two verses before our passage, he talks about calling older men and women as father and mother and younger men and women as brother and sister. This is family language. Actually, as a church, we're part of God's family. We become brothers and sisters to one another. And God, as he invites us into his family, we become each other's family. And we actually have an obligation to care for one another, especially those amongst us who don't have other people to care for them. Look at how Paul describes this kind of person who's in need in the church in verse 5. Take a look at verse 5. He says, the widow who is truly in need and left all alone has put her hope in God and continues night and day in her petitions and prayers. He says this kind of person has been left all alone. No support, no family, all alone. And she turns to God in prayer. Isn't this a wonderful response? And I think this is something that we should all strive for. When we're most in need, to turn to God in prayer and to trust him to provide for us. And in this particular case, the widow can trust in God to provide through the church's care. We are God's answer to prayer, to the widow's prayer who's in need for provision. As the church, we are to care for people like her. And Paul is talking particularly about widows. But I think it applies beyond that, actually. There are many people amongst us today and other congregations here at St. George who are in genuine need. So we're to think about how we can care for one another. We're obligated as family. There are many people in our church who are in need in a way that their family will not or cannot provide. And as family, we are to care for one another. And you know, I think we might be tempted sometimes to imagine the church as kind of like a structure that's out there that is kind of organized to care for us. But we are the church. The people are the church. And so if the church is to care for those who are most in need, then we are to care for those who are most in need amongst us. And this can work itself out in many ways, and it does here in different ways. Sometimes it's kind of organically, as you hear about someone's need, you can work out how it might look to care for that person. Often it's in gospel teams where you get to know people at a deeper level. You spend more time with them each week and you know one another's needs and you can care for them. And I know that the ministry team here, they regularly go through the list of people who are at church and they think about how their needs can be met best through one another. There are so many ways that it works out in practice, but what is important that we understand that we are family and we're obligated to be generous in caring for one another as God has cared for us. See, as a church family, we provide for those amongst us who cannot provide for themselves. We are to be generous to those in need, but strikingly, in this passage, there is a type of person who Paul actually says not to provide for. It's really interesting. He calls them self-indulgent widows. See, in contrast to the widow who depends on God who prays, Paul says in verse 6, have a look, verse 6, the widow who is self-indulgent is dead, even while she lives. That is a person who lives for themselves, for their own pleasures. They haven't yet found true life in Jesus, though they live, they're still dead in their sins. And can you see what Paul is saying? He's saying you can be in a very, very vulnerable position in society and still be self-indulgent. You can be even a widow and be self-indulgent. You can have very few possessions of your own and be self-indulgent. And to love a person like this, to love a person who's self-indulgent, living for themselves, the best thing is not always to give them more things for them to indulge in themselves. Paul says today in this passage that we must be generous in providing, but we must also be discerning in who we provide for. See, all we do is driven by love. Paul even says that in chapter 1, that everything is driven by love. But what it looks like to love different kinds of people in different situations might look different at different times. Down in verse 9 and 10, Paul actually is speaking about who's to be included and excluded in the church's formal provision. The church is to provide for people who've lived a life of serving others. Things like bringing up children and washing the saints' feet and helping the afflicted. Things where they've spent their life serving others. But the church is not to provide for those who have ongoingly lived in self-indulgent ways. And it's not that you kind of do enough good to earn the right to be provided for. That's not what Paul is talking about. Rather, it's a matter of careful, godly discernment of how to best love a person. See, the person known for serving will use what they're given well, but the person known for self-indulgence will use what they're given poorly. See, we must be both generous and discerning, always seeking to love. And that takes wisdom. It takes thought and counsel and care in how to love the people amongst us best. And I think we do have to be careful not to use this kind of category of person as an excuse not to be generous. The overwhelming force of this passage is generosity. God's been generous to us, and so we are to be generous to those amongst us. But we do need to be discerning in how to love people best. And the flip side here that we need to hear is a warning. It's a warning to not take advantage of people's generosity. I've been here at St. George for just a little bit, and I've been amazed at people's generosity at this church. We're surrounded by generous people who love to support those in need. But there is a subtle warning here for us to not take advantage of people's generosity. Paul says this kind of person, though they live, is dead. Well, finally, Paul turns to speak about younger widows, another category of person in need. And he says another thing. This chapter is full of things that might be shocking to us. He says another thing that sounds shocking. Paul says, don't put the younger widow on a formal list to receive ongoing support. Instead, they should get married. If ever there was someone in need of immediate care, it would be a young widow. Can you think of someone else who needs more care than that type of person? How can Paul say don't provide for them? He's not saying don't show compassion, and he's definitely not saying don't provide for their immediate needs. But what Paul is saying is that for that young widow, it's not a good long-term solution for them to live a life dependent on the church's provision. And I think there are kind of two principles in these verses that help us see why this is the case. And the first principle is that it's almost always better to help people help themselves. It's almost always better to help people get to a position where they can support themselves. You know the kind of saying, give a man a fish and feed him for one day, or teach a man to fish and feed him for a lifetime. Whenever we're thinking about people amongst us, we want to be thinking about how we can help them help themselves. And in this context, if a young widow married, she could be cared for her life by her new family. And so as we seek to discerningly provide and generously provide for those in need amongst us, a good instinct is to consider, how can I help someone help themselves? How can I help someone get into a position where they can sufficiently look after themselves? We live in a kind of different world to this first century widow. There's government welfare systems, and women can have jobs that can actually financially support themselves. That is to say, there are more ways to get into a position to support yourself than just by getting married. And so I think from this part of the passage, of course, we're to provide immediately for people's urgent need. But out of love, we want to help move people towards caring for themselves. And this isn't just for the young widow, this is for all of us. All of us who are in need. I think the second principle that explains what Paul says here is this. Provision without responsibility breeds idleness. It's actually a dangerous position to be in. To be provided for without having responsibility. It breeds idleness. See, if you have all of your needs provided for without any responsibilities, what will you fill your time doing? Paul says that the young widow who lives her life fully supported by the church will learn to be idle. In verse 13, Paul says she'll learn to fill her time going from house to house, gossiping, being a busybody, saying things that she shouldn't say. See, if you have lots of time available and no responsibility, this is what might happen. Provision without responsibility breeds idleness. Now, I think there are kind of ways that this pops up in everyday life for us and people in different seasons of life. You know, I think young people sometimes who aren't working and maybe are provided for by Centrelink can fall into this trap. When they're provided for, maybe they're living at home and all their needs are met, but they don't yet have a job or responsibilities. They can learn to fill their time being idle and being gossips. If we're in this kind of situation, we need to be aware of the danger of idleness. Paul speaks strongly against idleness. It's sin. We need to seek to take on responsibility to care for ourselves and to serve others. To use our time not to be idle, but to serve. I think another kind of time that this could pop up is at the other end of life, kind of post-retirement years. You know, I think part of the Australian dream is to pay off a mortgage and to seek to live a relaxed rest of your life. And it is a good thing to not need to work as you get older. It's a good thing to not need to work as you get older. But the temptation always when you have your needs met, but not responsibilities, is to be idle. And so we just need to be careful. We need to be aware of the danger that lays ahead of us in this kind of situation that Paul says. We need to work at filling our time with good things, in serving others. Because provision without responsibility breeds idleness. And so we are cautious of ongoingly providing for those who could learn to provide for themselves. Our instinct, again, is to help people learn to provide for themselves. This has been, you know, a quick run through different types of people in different situations, and I hope that we can learn to apply these principles not just to widows, but to those amongst us who are truly in need. To close, God generously provides for all our needs. That's the faith that we believe in. And so we are generously to provide for those within our families and within our church family who are in need. We do this out of love and with wisdom and discernment. So let's pray together for God's help as we seek to live lives that please Him. Loving Father, thank you for your kind and generous provision to us. Please help us live lives that please you. Please give us love for those in our family and church family. Give us generous spirits to love those who are most in need. And also please give us wisdom and discernment in how to care for people best. Amen.